The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Time for The Last Word on movies. This is Mario Rosenstock standing in for Matt Cooper. And when you are asked, or you were ever asked somebody, what is your favourite movie of all time? A lot of people will say The Godfather. And when they say, what's the other favourite movie of all time? A lot of people will say The Godfather Part 2. And for some people, The Godfather Part 2 is even superior to The Godfather Part 1. Both are amazing movies. And the creator, the director of those movies is, of course, the great Francis Ford Coppola, who also made movies like The Conversation and, incredibly, a movie as diverse to those two as Apocalypse Now, which some people think is the greatest of all, not only Vietnam movies, but maybe even war movies. So joining me is Brian Lloyd, movie critic, to discuss Francis Ford Coppola, who must be well into his 80s now.
Brian. 85.
85.
85.
And he is just releasing this week his latest tome, which is, tell us about it. It's
Megalopolis. So he apparently was talking about this on the set of Apocalypse Now. That's how long this has been in the works. He had a version of it ready to go at some point in the 80s, but it got put on the kibosh, and I think he went and made Tucker the Man and His Dream, if you recall that woman, Jeff Bridges.
Yes.
Then he had another version of it ready to go sometime in the 2000s, but then, of course, 9/11 happened, and he felt that it wasn't appropriate to make a film about New York and the decline of New York and America generally at a point in time like that. Fast forward to 2022, he decides to sell off parts of his massive wine empire, and he uses the sale of that to generate a line of credit to go off and self-finance Megalopolis. If you've seen any of his more... he's done two films, basically, since, you know, like his kind of 90s fallow era. He made two films called Youth Without Youth and then another film called Tetro, and both of them are very, very experimental in nature. He was working with a much, much smaller budget. Tetro, for example, was set in Argentina. Youth Without Youth talked about kind of tomes similar to kind of themes that he talked about before in Apocalypse Now, the idea of death and rebirth and constant kind of regeneration of life. But in Megalopolis, this is, I would say, his most experimental film, and definitely the film I think that will probably be the most divisive of all his works, because it's... I saw it, and I was thinking about it for days afterwards, and I know I didn't like it, but I still couldn't stop thinking about it because it was so unlike any film I've seen from him or ever in general. And I'll give you an example. There's a scene in the film, and this was done in Cannes, and it was done in some of the film festival screenings, and I think some cinemas have chosen to do this, but there's a scene in it essentially where Adam Driver's character, Cesar Catalina, who's this wild architect of the city of New Rome, and his office called the Design Authority has complete control over the city to destroy buildings whenever he wants. And after this satellite falls on top of New Rome and causes a massive apocalypse, he's given this press conference. And what's supposed to happen, it didn't happen at the screen and I saw, I don't think it's going to happen in screenings here, but essentially the screen shrinks down in size, and a person walks out from the actual live audience and walks directly to the screen and addresses Adam Driver. Adam Driver waits and pauses and then talks back to the person on outside of the fourth wall, if you know that kind of way. And the two of them are essentially have a back and forth. Now, the person from the audience has like the script essentially and is just repeating back his or her lines. And then the film then goes into the next part of the story. Yeah.
That is amazing.
It's nuts, yeah. I mean, that's never been done. I've never heard of that being done. And this is really the kind of the thing that Coppola was doing, was that he was basically experimenting with all forms of cinematic language. Like, there are moments in this film where I was reading about it. Like, there was one scene in it, and it's only just a small little clip, but Adam Driver and Natalie Emmanuel are doing this, like, actor's exercise where they're pulling and tugging at each other, but they're using an invisible rope. And Coppola saw them doing it while he was setting up the cameras, and he was like, that's brilliant, I'm going to put that in there. Has no bearing or no reference. You don't even understand what they're doing until you know that it's actually an actor's exercise. But he just liked the look and feel of it, and he was like, yep, I'm putting that in because this is about a transfer of energy between these two characters. This is essentially a 120 million euro art film. That's what this is.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you loved Apocalypse Now, if you loved The Conversation, if you loved even something like One from the Heart, that's fine. This is nothing like any of those. This is out on its own on a completely different wavelength and frequency from anything you have seen from him or ever.
Having said that, you said you were thinking about it for days. Were you thinking about it for days because of the movie or because of Francis Ford Coppola?
Everything. Both. Both. Because, I mean, the whole film is essentially about societal collapse and the idea of cultural stagnation. And, you know, it takes, you know, it's set in this city called New Rome, but it's really America and New York. And it's about how this corrupt mayor, played by Giancarlo Esposito, is fighting for re-election, is fighting to kind of keep his grip on the city, while Adam Driver, like I said, is this architect, and he wants to build this new form of city called Megalopolis, and he's going to use this experimental
technology
called Megapol. But it's kind of hinted at that he created this by killing his wife, and it's just very, again, very experimental. Plot lines aren't really kind of followed through. It's more about kind of tone and vibes as opposed to actual plot and actual kind of character development and stuff like that.
Vibes is the big word.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah,
everybody can do vibes.
Yeah, and like that's it. Like it's all about like a feeling. It's all about him kind of thinking about different things. So it's not it's not your traditional film.
So if you're a Coppola enthusiast, you might go to check it out.
Definitely, yeah.
But let's talk about Coppola in general because it's worth talking about.
Oh, 100%.
Godfather and Godfather 2. Many of us, like me, we watch them every year. I told you I watch Apocalypse Now every year, at least once a year anyway, because I have to try and keep up with... As you get older, it means more to you. But funnily enough, I saw a great episode of The Family Guy, where Peter Griffin...
It sits upon itself.
Peter Griffin is...
True.
They're all dying. He's like, I want to say something. I think Godfather insists upon itself, Lois. It insists upon itself. And what he's really saying is the Godfather all it's cracked up to be? Or are we just pretending all of us go, oh yeah, we all love the Godfather. What do you think, Brian? Is the Godfather really, really great?
It's kind of like Shawshank Redemption. And I always say, when people say, oh, my favourite film is Shawshank Redemption, that is the coward's choice. That is the coward's choice. Godfather Part 2 is kind of... It's a little bit, yeah. It is a little bit. Now, look, I love it. It's absolutely brilliant. You can study it. You can watch it 10 times and you'll get something different every single time out of it. I watched the most recent time I watched it, I was like really zoned in on Lee Strasberg and what he was doing and just the kind of the subtlety of his performance and all the rest of it. Watch it again, you look at Gordon Willis's cinematography. Watch it again, you hear Nino Rota's score. You know, like you get something out of it every single time you watch it. Does it insist upon itself? Yes. That's the point, though, because Coppola basically didn't want to make this film. And Mario Puzo wrote The Godfather as basically like an airport thriller. But Coppola was like, no, I'm going to elevate this to high art and make this about America and America in decline and, you know, about the Kennedys and, you know, American aristocracy and stuff like that. And he did that. But yes, it does insist upon itself, absolutely. And I think in that little bit then, when Peter's asked what's his real favourite film and he says The Money Pit, The Money Pit is a cracker. I love The Money Pit. The Money Pit is brilliant. Tom Hanks doing slapstick comedy, fantastic.
And of course, one of the things about The Godfather, which if you're a movie buff like you, you'll know this, but nobody really wanted it to happen.
No.
The executives didn't want it to happen. They wanted to set The Godfather in modern day America.
Heroin, yeah, that's right.
About heroin.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to make it a period movie at all. Nobody wanted Brando. Nobody wanted Pacino.
There is a brilliant documentary. I would recommend it to if you have any kind of interest in film. Watch this documentary. I don't know where you'd get it now. You might probably see it on Mubi or one of those places, but it's called The Kid Stays in the Picture.
Yeah, Robert Evans.
Robert Evans, exactly. He had a book out and then he kind of turned it into this documentary. It is fantastic. And there's a whole section in it when he talks about The Godfather. And he talks about how he had to fight for Al Pacino and, you know, had to fight to get Coppola on board. It is brilliant. And Evans is one of those dudes that, like, the stories that he has, and he's like a real raconteur, and it's fantastic, and just that whole era of New Hollywood and stuff like that. But yeah, nobody wanted Brando. Brando was over the hill. He was done. And then when Coppola came and met him and all the rest of it, and he kind of started shoving his mouth in with the cotton wads, and he like was building this character in front of him, like that is the level of skill and creativity that was going on with Brando at that time. And then, of course, famously, you know, when he went to the Oscars and he refused to take the Oscar and he sent Sachin Littlefeather up, and that was one of the key moments in Oscar history. So,
and you can't not talk about Coppola without talking about Apocalypse Now.
Which
I really do think is a stone cold classic.
Oh, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And I mean, you know, his famous line was that, you know, this is not a film about Vietnam. This is Vietnam. We had too much money, we had too much equipment, and slowly but surely we went mad. Another documentary I would recommend, Hearts of Darkness. incredible, just about the idea of like artistic hubris, the idea of, you know, being given too much latitude, being given too much money, how that can just corrupt a person and just drive them insane. Great back behind the scenes stories, you know, Eleanor Coppola watching her husband basically disintegrate in front of him. And there is this theory that Coppola never recovered from Apocalypse Now, that this film took so much out of him that all the works that he did afterwards were never at the same level. And I think that's true, because like you look at, like, again, One from the Heart, Tucker the Man and His Dream, The Rainmaker. He didn't have that edge anymore. I think Apocalypse Now really took something out of his soul.
But Martin Sheen had a heart attack.
Marlon Brando turned up, didn't know any of his lines. Harvey Keitel got fired. Dennis Hopper, you know, roaring and shouting and all the rest of it. There's so much in it. The Philippine government, Ferdinand Marcos, taking his helicopters off him because he had to go fight communist insurgents and stuff like that. There is so much lore and history in Apocalypse Now. But also as well is just, it's just, yeah, it's again, it's like Godfather. It's a film that you'll watch it 10, 15, 20 times. You will get something new and different out every time. Then the Redux edition, where there's like an entire section put back in about French Indochina and colonialism and all that kind of stuff, where they, you know, journey into the past. It's an incredible film.
What I noticed about it recently was the colours.
Yes!
The colours in the movie is incredible. And it's left stuff in our brains movie, which are indelible. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You can't see helicopters. That's it, Ride of the Valkyries.
About 10 gift grub sketches have had that image.
Really?
Where there's lads on their, Bertie and Pascal on their, you know,
mopeds
coming over at Grafton Street, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, everybody uses that piece of music. Or the horror. The horror.
Yeah, you can imagine, like, I could hear Kino, like, saying the horror.
The horror.
Yeah, do you know
the
what I mean?
Horror.
Yeah, that's it. I could hear that. You could write a sketch.
It just lends itself
it
to
does,
it.
It does, yeah. No, it was
amazing.
It ingrained itself that much in popular culture that you can't see, like, a row of helicopters coming out of the distance without hearing Ride of the Valkyries.
All right, let's spend the last 3 minutes talking about The Outrun.
Yeah, so this is Saoirse Ronan's, based on the, travelogue nature writing book by Amy Liptrot. She plays a recovering alcoholic who journeys back to the Orkney Islands. Her father, played by Stephen Delane, is a schizophrenic bipolar. Her mother is an evangelical Christian. She's basically trying to maintain her sobriety while trying to kind of reconnect with nature around her. It's very much like, I mean, you know, you think about films that deal with alcoholism, you think of like Sandra Bullock in 28 Days, you think of Nicolas Cage.
That's right, Elizabeth Shue,
Leaving Las Vegas. And it's really about this idea of self-destruction. But what The Outrun really deals with is the idea of, okay, you have to work on sobriety, that it takes work. You really have to lock yourself in and, you know, remove yourself from all kind of temptation and just do the work of dealing with your alcoholism. Where does it come from? What are the root causes? And it's really like this very deep character drama. And I think Saoirse Ronan as a performer, I mean, she is going to depths and places that it takes actors years to get to, but she's able to draw them out from underneath and really give it a credence and really give it an authority and integrity. Stephen Delane and Saskia Reeves, I mean, they're more kind of supporting roles in it, but they're fantastic. Saskia Reeves in particular, she's brilliant in Slow Horses. Are you watching that?
Yeah, Slow Horses. And I stopped it and I'm going to go back to it.
Do. It's brilliant. It's terrific. Yeah, Saskia Reeves plays this sort of simpish secretary to Gary Oldman's, you know, John le Carré by way of Viz spy character. But she plays this really kind of like, you know, wounded deer of a mother that's just desperately trying to protect Saoirse Ronan, where Saoirse Ronan is much more wild and much more kind of like, you know, raw and intense. But I loved it. I mean, the Orkney Islands, I mean, it's really cinematic. Like, it's all about like the wildness of the ocean and, you know, this deep place of, you know, like feeling and nature and what does it all mean and all the rest of it. It's not for everybody. I mean, the plot is not kind of there, I would say, but the character and the performances that you see in this are really worth watching. So, yeah.
You think it's something that she might be in the awards
for? Oh, I should think so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Is her career going well, do you think, just from an outsider's point of view?
Yeah, I think so. I think.
Movie guy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not to be, who cares what I think, but like, I think her work, when she does art house films like this, and like Ammonite was another one she did with Kate Winslet, she's really, really good at it. She's not done a lot of, I would say, mainstream blockbuster kind of stuff. And that's, you know, that's important. that she has kind of maintained her artistic integrity. I would love to see her in a film that has a budget and has a real kind of like director behind it. Like, there's a great film that she did called See How They Run with, I'm drawing a blank on his name, Galaxy Quest, Sam Rockwell. And it's brilliant. And it's just like kind of like Agatha Christie's screwball comedy, and she's fantastic in it. So she really has like versatility. But yeah, I'd love to see her in a, like a really kind of big budget blockbuster, maybe not a blockbuster, but just a big kind of budget film. She's doing this thing called Blitz with Steve McQueen that I'd be interested to see. I think that could be interesting. But yeah, no, she's doing well. She's, like, I mean, look, she's killing it. Like, she's got like however many Oscar nominations under her belt. She's going to win one eventually. So
you were talking about the Outrun there with Saoirse and the Orkneys and bleakness and the wild and this, the desolation of the landscape and everything. The only movie I've ever walked out of at the end, and I was thinking about it for 3 days afterwards, was a film called Breaking the Waves.
Oh yeah.
I think it's Lars von Trier.
Yes.
And that is, that left me completely changed, and I didn't know whether I liked it or not, but it was really desolate and bleak, and it was set in kind of an oil rig in Scotland.
I think I've
have a look at it if you see it out there.
Yeah, Megalopolis is like that as well. Like, I don't know if I liked it or not, but I was thinking about it for days afterwards. I was like, I mean, did I like that or not?
Yeah,
like,
and that says something.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Brian Lloyd, thank you very much for joining me on The Last Word on the Movies.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.